taking care of your eyes during a pandemic and beyond. Chances are you're spending more time in front of screens these days. Most of us are, as Zoom meetings have replaced the conference room and we've been FaceTiming loved ones instead of gathering in the same place. Add to that all of that downtime you might be spending on social media or playing online games. All of it takes a toll on our eyes. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss some of the signs of vision and eye problems, ways to take better care of your eyes, and why it could save your life. Have you heard of the 20/20/20 rule? Are you getting more headaches recently? Is it safe to get an eye exam during COVID? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. It is easy to take our eyes for granted. That is, until our vision starts to blur, or when we start experiencing dry eye or floaties. Today, we're going to talk about eye care in a time of COVID-19. My guest is Dr. Jesselyn Quint. She's an optometrist practicing in Augusta and co-owner of Smart Eye Care with locations in Augusta, Bangor, and Farmingdale. And as always, we want to hear from you in the audience. Have you noticed eye strain because of the time you've been spending looking at computer screens recently? When is the last time you had an eye exam? Are you concerned about seeing an optometrist during the COVID pandemic? You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, it's a different phone number than our pledge phone number, so I will repeat the Maine Calling phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Dr. Quint, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here.
We have all been looking at screens a lot, so much for in-person meetings that looking at a screen with all your friends seems to be, your friends or colleagues seems to be the new thing. What can this do to us? What can this do to our eyes?
Yeah, there's, you know, a lot of screen time affects the eyes in a lot of different ways. A common syndrome that has kind of emerged with technology is digital eye strain or computer vision syndrome. And this is basically just a group of kind of eye or vision related problems that result from when we just have prolonged exposure to computers, tablets, cell phones, any form of technology, basically. And this can cause a lot of eye symptoms. Some of those symptoms could be kind of a strain, a lot more tired eyes, eye fatigue, headaches, blurry vision, dry eye symptoms, which could be burning eyes, watering eyes, redness, headaches, and even neck and shoulder pain. And so, talking with your eye care provider, your local optometrist, about how you can kind of prevent this digital eye strain is really important.
If you already have eyesight problems, can looking at screens a lot make them worse?
In some cases, definitely. I think the first step is identifying to make sure you don't have a current underlying vision or eye health issue, because sometimes if that's not addressed to the fullest extent, any sort of digital exposure can definitely make those symptoms a lot worse.
So what are if someone's listening right now and thinking to myself, I wonder if I need to have this checked out or if I just need to rest my eyes more. What are some of the symptoms that would be red flags for you if someone is thinking, oh, my eyes get tired sometimes? Is that enough to go to your optometrist, or does it need to be something more dramatic than that?
Sometimes it's as simple as just, having kind of fluctuating vision changes, or the eyes just aren't feeling the best. If someone hasn't had an eye exam within the last year, that's definitely a good place to start to discuss those types of issues that you're having. If you're not sure, kind of good general rules to follow are, there's the 20/20/20 rule. And so if you feel like your eyes are feeling better after taking breaks, that can really be indicative of this digital eye strain. And that should warrant, talking to your local eye care provider about how you can better address that. whether it's through the form of a device or some different exercises that you can do to just keep your eyes really healthy.
Okay, the 20-20-20 rule. I just learned that today. Why don't you tell us what it is?
Yeah, so it means to every 20 minutes, take a 20-second break and look at something 20 feet away. A lot of times whenever we take breaks, like if we're working on our laptop, we'll take a break and check our cell phone, but that totally defeats the purpose. You need to look at something, you know, far off in the distance to allow that focusing system to really relax, reset. So every 20 minutes, look far away, count to 20 seconds, and that's a good rule of thumb to follow.
I love it. That is the message of the day. If you're taking a break from your computer, don't look at your phone. Don't take a look.
Exactly.
Don't look from your work email to your Facebook on your phone, right?
Right.
So really, the looking like you're daydreaming, staring into space is good for your eyes.
Who would have thought, right?
That's great. What are you seeing right now in your practice as people are coming back in? What are there problems that you're seeing now that there are more of than there used to be?
Yeah, definitely that digital eye strain, all those symptoms that we just talked about, those are through the roof. There's a lot of, patients want to know what the effects of that are. There's a lot of questions right now about blue light. You know, blue light is a really kind of trendy thing. And so I feel like a lot of my patient education time is spent kind of discussing those aspects, with my patients. Dry eye disease is at an all-time high because of screen time, and dry eye can obviously cause comfort issues, but it can really affect the vision clarity, and so really kind of, seeing a lot of cases with that. Optometry has really played a unique role during this whole pandemic time by seeing a lot more eye emergencies, which has been a really cool opportunity for us to kind of keep that workload out of the emergency rooms, out of the urgent care. Optometrists are really well trained and well equipped to, diagnose and manage different medical eye conditions. A lot of eye emergencies fall into that category. And so a lot of my colleagues and I, over the course of this pandemic time, we've seen a lot more eye emergencies, throughout it. Now, since things are returning a little bit more, I don't want to call it normal, but changing a little bit, now there's routine care that's being incorporated in. And so here in Maine, since the beginning of May, a lot of optometrists are back to seeing kind of normal comprehensive eye exams.
Let's talk about that emergency piece a little bit, because I thought that was really interesting. I think there are a lot of things that might happen in which someone would automatically go to the emergency room. I'm thinking about maybe a rope snapping back and hitting you in the eye, or a fish hook getting caught in your eye, or suddenly waking up and seeing spots that you've never seen before. Can you walk us through when an eye emergency is indeed something to go to your local emergency room at the hospital, and when you want to call the optometrist?
Yeah, honestly, if it's anything related to the eye, the good first step is at your optometrist. Anything emergency could be something involving pain or something causing a vision change. If anything related to the eye is causing one of those two things, call the local optometrist first, and they can kind of walk you through either by seeing you or directing you to where you need to go. Optometrists have the training. I mean, we do eyes all day long, so we are well equipped with any tissue of the eye and can handle whatever comes its way. And if it's something that needs, additional surgical care, we can best set you up to, what specialist you need to see. The other unique thing about going to an optometrist versus an urgent care or an emergency room setting is that we have all the equipment, all the special diagnostic equipment that's needed to get a really good view of the eye. And so sometimes even just within my practice, I have patients that pre-COVID would go to the urgent care. The urgent care provider, as brilliant and talented as they are, wouldn't have the right diagnostic tool. And so the patient would end up back in my chair anyway for me to manage the condition. And so why not just keep the workload low, allow optometrists to really do what they do best, which is eyes, and, not adding unnecessary healthcare costs. Why have the extra copay if you can just go to your optometrist and get your eye emergency condition managed?
Does yours practice, and do most practices have after hours emergency numbers?
A lot do, yeah. It obviously varies per practice. But, you know, even if it's not your optometrist, we live in a state that has amazing optometrists, you know, in all counties. And so being able, if your eye care practice particularly doesn't offer after hours, then, you know, you could find another local optometrist that does. The other thing is that sometimes, too, you know, if it's an emergency, it's possible that it could just wait. You know, if it happens, if you have like a conjunctivitis thing that happens at 3 a.m., it might be worthwhile to just wait 4 hours until your optometrist, office opens at 7 a.m. You might be waiting that long anyway in the emergency room.
I'm glad you brought up conjunctivitis because I want you to explain to us what that is and if there is a connection to COVID. I understand that there is some information circulating that suggests it is.
Yeah, great question. So conjunctivitis, also known as pink eye, there's three kind of main categories of it. There's allergic conjunctivitis, bacterial, and then viral. Specifically with COVID, COVID is a virus, and so there is a link between a viral conjunctivitis and COVID. However, it's very kind of rare presentation of it. Looking at different case reports and different eye care providers that have reported COVID-related conjunctivitis, it's less than 7% of COVID patients. So of course, anything can happen. And as we say in that, you know, in the healthcare world, it's not rare if it's in your chair, but the odds of getting a conjunctivitis specifically from COVID or for that being the first initial presentation is a pretty low statistic.
Yet one of the biggest pieces of advice we've been hearing from Dr. Shaw, Dr. Nirav Shaw, is also a great piece of advice for conjunctivitis, which is don't touch your eyes, right?
Yes, or your face.
Does that make contact wearers more at risk?
Yeah, actually, no. So there's really no evidence to suggest that contact lens wearers are at a higher risk of acquiring COVID than eyeglass wearers. Obviously, you know, practicing appropriate hygiene for contact lens wearers and non-contact lens wearers in general is the best way to reduce any risk. But wearing contacts, there's no link to putting it at a higher risk of getting COVID.
All right. Well, we're going to go to a call. I'm going to go to Peter calling from Lubeck. Hi, Peter. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. The two comments I wanted to make. First, you know, young kids in particular, the fact is they're looking at very high definition computer screens. You don't see the analog soft glow anymore. The digital presentation on the screen is so sharp. I would recommend turn off the lights in a room with the screen on and turn your back to it and watch how the color patterns get blasted up on the wall behind you. I tracked the shift from analog to digital in the TV industry, and I watched that very carefully, and I was very, you know, much intent with my kids not to, you know, spend too much time on computers. The second thing, more importantly, though, I always go outside, as I am today. I'm out here in Lubeck, and I always look for things at a great distance. I find it's a very helpful exercise. I think the eye benefits from it. People are amazed that I can often spot movement, you know, anywhere from, you know, 1,000 to 1,500 yards away out in the dunes or, you know, in any other setting. So if you want to do something that's very healthy for your eye and very simple, you know, go out and, for example, now I'm looking at a bird probably about 300 yards out and 80 feet up in a tree. And, you know, do that consciously. You know, let your eye really focus on things at great distance. I think it's very good for eye health.
Okay. Peter, thank you so much for calling in. What are your thoughts, Dr. Quint?
Yeah, Peter, it sounds like you have amazing eyesight, which is great. But I do think you bring up a really great point that, you know, especially for children, exposing them to natural light, getting them out in the sunlight, playing outdoors, has actually been really helpful in preventing the progression of myopia, which is just being nearsighted. And so currently, it's not really talked about. It's talked a lot about in the eye care world, but not necessarily in the public, is that there's this thing known as the myopic epidemic, where there's just this resurgence of kids and patients that are becoming more nearsighted, which down the road can put patients at a higher risk for things like a retinal break or tear, or, you know, kind of some not so great long-term issues. And so some of the research that's out there has shown that by limiting screen time and getting out in a more natural light setting for a period of hours throughout the day has been shown to kind of help reduce that. So
your advice would be, even if a child is, say, doing a lot of schoolwork on a computer during the day, to get outside and sort of look up in the treetops or spend some time in the natural sunlight looking around.
Absolutely.
So interesting. Peter, thank you so much for your call. We are going to take a quick break. I'm going to slip in the main calling phone number one more time before we go to our Pledge Central. Our main calling phone number, 1-800-399-3566. If you have any questions about vision or eye care, you can also send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Trueline, a full-service marketing and branding agency who believe in the value of local independent journalism. Online at wearetrueline.com. By Bristol Seafood's Fair Trade North Atlantic Wild Scallops, harvested from the Gulf of Maine and found in the freezer at your local Hannaford. And by Fogtown Brewing Company in Ellsworth, committed to safely serving food, music, and craft beer at their outdoor beer garden. FogtownBrewing.com.
And you are listening to Maine Public Radio. It's Maine Calling. I'm Nora Flaherty, All Things Considered host, joined by Mark Simpson, our news director here, asking you to come through for your public radio station and call another number, 800-866-1475, or give online at mainepublic.org.
You know, this is a great moment to give a shout-out to that main calling team there, Jen Rooks, Cindy Hahn, Jonathan Smith, all doing a great job, plus the support crew that is making it happen. Jen Rooks has been hosting the show from her house. We had our engineering team go out there and build her a studio setup. It looks pretty sweet, I have to say. I'm a little envious of that studio setup. It's so much fun. But the main calling team has been doing just a tremendous job here during the pandemic. Let's not forget, all those months back when this first started, they expanded the program 2 hours, doubled in size, because there was so much information coming out about the COVID-19 situation that we wanted to share with the public. And it's really become a tremendous resource to explore all kinds of topics, especially at this moment when so many different things are happening in our world. So that's why we're asking you to call. Maybe you're a fan of Maine Calling. It's all made possible by your donations. Pick up the phone and call 1-800-866-1475, or go to mainepublic.org. If you can give right now, that's great. The number again, 800-866-1475. They can't answer your questions about vision. That's a different number, but you can give your gift of support at that number.
Again, 800-866-1475. You can give online at mainepublic.org. I feel like Maine Calling is actually a really good metaphor for how public radio works. You know, you're the person that we answer to. You call upon us, as you would call Maine Calling, and we're here to answer your questions and to listen to what's important. And we're able to do that because public radio is listener-supported. That is how public media works. It always has been. Many said it couldn't work, but it's worked great for us and for you, because you get a kind of news and information and analysis that you wouldn't get if we were advertiser-driven. The number to call to support that, and it is so vital right now in your life and in society, not to be too highfalutin, is 800-866-1475. We are online at mainepublic.org, and thank you so much.
You know, every time we do one of these membership campaigns, it's a little test of our model, to see if our model is working. And you know what? It's been a success now for decades. So we're really glad our audience is such a strong supporter of the work we do here at Maine Public. We're calling 1-800-866-1475. Maine Calling is a part of your day. Maine Public is a part of your life. It's a platform for you, the public, to interact with various people, guests, novelists, authors, and public officials. We've had Dr. Shah, the head of the CDC, on to take your calls from all around Maine. We've had Governor Mills on to take your calls from all around Maine to help hold our public officials accountable, to get information out there, and most importantly, to answer your questions, the questions that you have in your life right now about all these important things that are happening out there. 1-800-866-1475. That is the number you can call to give. Maybe you can become a sustainer if you choose the amount that works for your wallet, works for your budget. Maybe you can give at the $50 a month level. That would be really great. Tell them you want to become a sustainer by calling 1-800-866-1475 or going over to mainpublic.org.
If you're already a member of Maine Public Radio, thank you so much. You make what we do here possible. If you've just started listening, or maybe you've been listening for a while and you've never had a chance to call in, or you've never really felt like it was the right time for you, but now does feel like that time, welcome. Please call. Please join us. And thank you for your support. The number to call is 800-866-1475. We are online at mainpublic.org. Think about what your favorite show is every day, the show that kind of gets you through the day and makes your life better every day. If that's Maine Calling, now is a great time to call. Maybe it's All Things Considered. Maybe it's Morning Edition. Maybe you wake up every morning and catch up on the news with Erwin Gratz. No matter when that is, no matter what part of the day it is, maybe you love fresh air. I love fresh air. Now's the time to come forward and support your public radio station by calling 800-866-1475 or giving online at mainpublic.org.
They're just extolling the virtues of going out in fresh air just a moment ago on the show. 1-800-866-1475 or go to mainpublic.org. We're getting ready to go back to the show. Thanks for everyone who's given so far.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, taking good care of your vision, my guest, Dr. Jesslyn Quint, who is a Maine optometrist, a fellow at the American Academy of Optometry, and a board-certified diplomate of the American Board of Optometry. As always, we want to hear from you. Send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now, Jane Balick, who is Executive Director of Think About Your Eyes. Hi, Jane. Thanks for giving us a call.
Hi, Jennifer. It's great to be here with you.
So the Think About Your Eyes campaign, its name seems pretty self-explanatory. Why is this so important? Why have a big national public interest campaign?
Well, you know, Think About Your Eyes is really an exciting campaign because it brings together all the wonderful optometrists like Dr. Quint and all of the companies that make up the vision industry, so the people that make the glasses and the equipment and all those things. And, you know, they came together several years ago and decided that there needed to be this group effort to really help educate consumers about the importance of annual comprehensive eye exams and really prioritizing their vision. So we have created lots of resources, a great website where consumers can go and learn different things about their eyesight and caring for their vision, and also look for a doctor. So since we started, we've helped about 11 million people find an eye doctor and get an eye exam, which is very exciting for us.
Jane, that's great. And I did put information about the campaign on the Maine Calling Facebook page. We'll have it on our web page as well. And part of it is the digital eye strain quiz. That's where I learned about the 20/20/20 that Dr. Quint was talking about earlier. But one thing I thought was really interesting reading through your information online is the sense that so many children go underdiagnosed or undiagnosed. What are some of the signs that your kids may have trouble seeing or may need to have an eye test? They're not always that obvious, are they?
They're not. And, you know, what our wonderful eye doctors always say is that kids don't know that they have a vision problem. They think that what they're seeing is just normal. So, you know, you may see that your child is holding things very close. There are also certain behavior issues that are masking vision problems. So, you know, I think that we have a quiz on there too, not only just for digital eye strain, but we also have a quiz that says, you know, does your child need an eye exam? And it helps walk you through the different things to look for. And especially now when students are home and their parents are really watching them learn, you know, teachers usually will signal to parents that their child might be having some problems in school. And so they may be the first person to see it and bring it to the attention of the parents. Now parents are in that role of having to really watch what's happening and seeing some of those problems. And as Dr. Quint pointed out, the digital eye strain is huge, and kids need to have a different workstation than adults have. You know, your computer should be at a certain level, you know, based from your eyes, below your eyes, and away from you. So a lot of these things consumers don't know, parents don't know, and we've really just been trying to do more to educate people and let them know that you really do need to think about your eyes, and especially during COVID, you know, helping them to understand that this is a healthcare experience, that your optometrist is a healthcare provider. It's safe. It is, it's important to go there. And as Dr. Quint pointed out, it can help keep you away from the emergency room and help actually identify other things that need to be addressed more urgently.
Well, Jane, thank you so much for calling in. Jane Balick, Executive Director of Think About Your Eyes. And as I've mentioned, there's information on our webpage and Facebook page about that. I want to ask you further about that, though, Dr. Quint. I understand that the eyes can kind of be the window into the rest of the body in terms of diagnosing some other diseases and sometimes could even save someone's life. It seems like a pretty big thing to say, but give us an example of what can you find as an optometrist that can end up changing somebody's life?
Yeah, the eyes are the window to the rest of the body. You know, looking at the back part of the eye, the retina specifically, it's the only place in the body that you can see the arteries and veins, the vascular system as is. Everywhere else it's covered by, you know, skin and tissue. And so looking at that can be can give a really good insight about what is happening with the vascular system, you know, everywhere else. Specifically, about a couple months ago, kind of right before this whole COVID thing had happened, I had a patient come in, normal kind of routine, not noticing any changes, you know, looked at the back of the eyes, and I noticed a little plaque in one of the patient's vessels. And so that can be really indicative of something more vascular-related, systemic. So I sent the patient to their primary eye care provider. We did a full, you know, workup and that kind of a thing. And it ended up, by catching that in the back part of the eye, it ended up helping the patient not have a stroke by being able to get on the necessarily treatment plans to address that. Sometimes even, again, actually a couple weeks ago, I had a lady who was in her 50s who had came in. She was noticing a vision change and just thought that she needed a glasses, you know, adjustment. And so did her exam. She did, in fact, have a change in her prescription. But an eye exam, as we know, is so much more than just glasses or contacts. You know, there's the whole health aspect of it. And so when I was looking at the health of her eye, you know, in combination with her change in the prescription, I suspected that maybe this change was happening because of an underlying systemic condition, specifically diabetes. And so I sent her back to her primary care provider. We did blood work. And in fact, she was, in fact, a very uncontrolled diabetic. And that wouldn't possibly have been caught if she hadn't have come in for, you know, quote unquote, a normal eye exam. And so, you know, those cases like that really do highlight the point that optometrists play a huge role in the systemic health of a patient, and also kind of point out that eye exams are really, you know, the bulk of it is looking at the health part of it. And you really need to have an eye doctor looking at that and not just like an online screening, or while school screenings and pediatrician screenings can be really helpful, it doesn't replace, you know, an optometrist's assessment of that connection between, you know, possibly a vision change and if it's related to an underlying systemic or health issue.
I'll go to Maggie, who's calling from York. Hi, Maggie, go ahead. Maggie, go ahead, yes.
Thank you for taking my call. In January, we have a home in St. Martin, and the airport is very close. People go down to see the planes come in. And this Russian plane was leaving after the holidays and turned around and blew their engine just for fun to entertain their guests. right at the restaurant where we're eating at. I had glasses on, but it was like being sandblasted. I got sand in my eyes. And then all of a sudden, I started seeing these black spots all over my eyes. And I remembered when I was a teenager, my mother's older friends were saying, oh, floaters, floaters. It's gotten better, and I don't have very many left. But, I mean, it was that the... It happened immediately. Was that a damage due to being sandblasted?
Good question. Go ahead, Dr. Quint.
Yeah, so it's possible. So anytime anybody experiences an acute or kind of a new vision change, like new floaters, new flashes of light, one thing specifically that needs to be ruled out is if there's any changes to the retina. So if you haven't seen, if you haven't had a dilated eye exam because of your new onset of floaters, I encourage you to find somebody to just make sure that your retina looks okay. There's a lot of different trauma that can affect the eyes in a lot of different ways, and I would probably have to see your eyes and do a thorough assessment to really kind of give you an official diagnosis.
Good luck to you, Maggie. We're going to go to Mike. Hold on just a second here. For some reason, this is not letting me drop. But anyway, we'll go to Mike, who's calling from Vassalboro. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a male in my early 60s, type 1 diabetic, well-controlled, blood pressure is okay. And I've experienced an odd phenomenon with my vision in the past several years. It's happened a few times. I'll see sort of a shimmering in the edge of my peripheral vision that looks sort of like looking through a soap bubble or maybe looking at oil on water, sort of rainbow-colored. And sometimes it will spread to cover most of my vision, and it usually goes away within about 20 minutes. No other feeling about it. It just is an odd visual phenomenon. I wonder if you could tell me anything about that.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Go ahead, Dr. Quint.
Yeah, great. Great question. So, again, anytime there's a vision change, a good first step is that if you haven't seen an optometrist already, go see them and make sure the tissue in the eye, especially the back part of the eye, is healthy. If all of that checks out, sometimes things, and again, this is not an official diagnosis because I'm not looking at your eyes, sometimes things like an ocular migraine or a migraine aura. A migraine aura is where you get these kind of vision changes, and then classically 30 minutes later you can get a headache. But it doesn't have to be the most excruciating headache of your life. It could just be a dull ache. And so whether it's an ocular migraine where it can vary per person, it can present exactly how you described. Some people get complete loss of vision. Some people get kind of a black tunnel vision. It varies per person. If you're noticing any of that, definitely talk with your optometrist or your eye care provider, and then look for common triggers, because just like a migraine, a lot of times an ocular migraine can have a common trigger, whether it's a temperature change, stress, food-related, activity-related. But that would be a great conversation to have with your optometrist.
Mike, thanks so much for your call. If you have a question, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, a brief email, please, talk@mainpublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Breakwater, offering summer day camp programs for ages 3 to 18 through August 21st. Enrichment.breakwaterlearning.org. By Encore Renewable Energy, committed to fueling Maine's economic recovery with solar energy for businesses and institutions. Encore.eco. And by CEI, offering short-term reboot financing and advice to help businesses get back on track. CEIMaine.org.
The number to call to support your public radio station, 800-866-1475. Online, it's mainpublic.org. Nora Flaherty and Mark Simpson joining you during Maine Calling to talk to you about the amazing local programming that you get on Maine Public Radio. I'll just say one more time before I embark upon that. The number to call to support that local programming is 800-866-1475. You can give online at mainpublic.org. Mark, I've been thinking a lot about our local programming that we do, the local news stuff in particular, because that's my area, and yours as well. And Maine does punch above its weight nationally in terms of how much people care about what's going on in Maine. I mean, the Susan Collins race is an obvious one. But also one thing that public radio does, and this is increasingly rare in the world of radio, is really do like solid local radio coverage of issues that people need to know about.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we're fortunate here to have a very solid newsroom at Maine Public, able to get across the entire state of Maine. It's funny when we talk to our colleagues in New England, we've got the biggest geographical area, but we don't necessarily have the biggest team, but we still are able to keep up with our colleagues in bigger markets. This is maybe too inside baseball, but we compete against stations like WBUR Boston. I mean, that's a huge, colossal newsroom. They're producing shows like Here and Now and On Point, you know, but we go up against them and really hold our weight. So, you know, there's a lot that this team can do, and it's supported by you, our listening audience. You are the biggest part of our budget, and it's all made possible because of member support. So pick up that phone, call 1-800-866-1475. That's the number to call, mainpublic.org. You know, we've got great journalists here in our newsroom. We've got our Augusta team. Steve Missler was on Here and Now just the other day. We've got our education reporting team, Robbie Feinberg, spending time up in northern Maine and also around Bangor. Patty White's been covering the CDC briefings. Our own Susan Sharon does amazing reporting around prisons and justice issues. Yourself, Nora, your series of lessons learned from the pandemic we've been hearing over the past couple weeks. And so many others. Fred Bever, you know, all over what's happening with Portland City Council and the lobster fishery. News coming out of that all the time. This is a moment when there's tons of news happening, and it's great to have a trusted space, a trusted partner like Maine Public to help you make sense of it all. If it's become important to you increasingly here in recent months, this is a great time to give. Go ahead, if you haven't taken that step to becoming a listener contributor, and pick up the phone and call 1-800-866-1475.
Again, 800-866-1475, mainepublic.org. Maine's a small state, but we deserve excellent news coverage. We deserve to be as informed as anybody else around the country, and that is what Maine Public delivers every day, because that's what you've asked for, and that's what you're supporting with your membership to Maine Public Radio. The number is 800-866-1475, mainepublic.org. We are gearing up now for the election coverage in the fall, which is kind of amazing. And your gift today, especially as a new member or a sustaining member, will help pay for our upcoming election coverage so you can stay informed as the election develops, as the issues around the election develop. There are bound to be plenty of issues around it as the campaigns go on. And as you cast your vote, the coverage that goes on after that, the number to call to support that is 800-866-1475. We are online at mainepublic.org.
You know, we're in the middle of Maine Calling right now. Fascinating show about vision and what it means here during this moment in the pandemic. And, you know, things are starting to reopen. Maybe you've gone to the eye doctor. Maybe you've seen something different happen to you. This is a great platform for you to call in, get your questions answered if you can. But that Maine Calling team has been an incredible tool for us with the program they create. As we expanded that show to be 2 hours long during the height of the pandemic here, but also we've been bringing you the daily CDC briefings. Those are now on Tuesdays and Thursdays, so we've been broadcasting those to you. But those experts and elected officials, we're helping to keep them accountable on programs like Maine Calling. We've had Dr. Shaw, we've had the governor on to go direct to the people and be able to answer your questions out there. 1-800-866-1475. That is the number to call right now as we get ready to head back to programming. You can give over at mainepublic.org as well while the program's on. And thanks so much to everyone who's given already.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You are listening to Maine Calling. Today's topic, taking care of your eyes. Joining me, Dr. Jesselyn Quint, who's an optometrist practicing in Augusta and co-owner of Smart Eye Care. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Jesselyn, one of the things I was fascinated to learn a few minutes ago was that optometrists are seeing more, is it pronounced myopia, more nearsightedness because of all the time that kids are spending in front of screens. Are there other things that you're seeing more of now, other conversations happening in the optometry world that maybe aren't known by the general public yet?
I would say dry eye disease is definitely kind of an up-and-coming thing, especially because of screen time. I think the general public thinks that, you know, dry eye disease, they're a little irritated, I'll put some drops in and it's all good. But there's actually different types of dry eye disease, and one big type called an evaporative dry eye stems from the oil glands that are all along the eyelid margins. And sometimes those glands can get clogged and they can start to die essentially because of reduced blinking. And usually when we're on the screen, we tend to blink 60% less. And so a lot of patients, even I've had kids even as young as 2 or 3, have demonstrated these dry eye symptoms because of the digital age that we're in.
I'm going to go to an email from Caroline. She asks, when should my child have their first eye check? And then how frequently the pediatrician does an eye check?
Great question. So the American Optometric Association recommends that a comprehensive eye exam is done within the first year of life, then again at age 3, and then if everything is normal, again at age 6, and then after that, once a year. And again, a comprehensive eye exam is definitely different than a school screening or a pediatric vision screening. While those are very helpful and kind of flagging some things, even if a parent thinks that their child's eyes are perfectly healthy and there's no known family history of any eye conditions, you know, getting a child in within the first year of life, again, age 3, age 6, and thereafter can be really helpful. And of course, assessing a child's ocular health. But specifically if they need glasses, because a child can't always tell you if things are blurry. If they're born with blurry vision, it's going to look the same. It's not going to look any different. But a comprehensive eye exam also addresses the binocular vision aspect, which is how well the eyes work together. And so sometimes different learning disabilities or reading aptitudes really at its foundational core are because of an underlying binocular vision issue. And so if that can be caught before a patient goes in or a child goes into school and the tools can be given to set them best up for success, that changes a whole child's outlook on learning, right? Reading suddenly isn't as difficult. It sets them up to want to, you know, do better in school. Grades can improve. And so sometimes, you know, addressing those in a full comprehensive eye exam is the first step.
Dr. Quinn, I've always wondered when I've seen a baby with glasses, and we've all seen the videos of babies getting glasses for the first time and grinning. How do you know? You can't talk to a child. You can't say, when I go to an eye exam, the optometrist is asking me, you know, which side looks blurrier, what letters can you read? Before you could ask someone those questions, how do you figure it out?
Yeah, so a child's eye exam, especially an infant's eye exam, is definitely different than kind of the classic adult exam in the way that we don't do which is better, 1 or 2. We do something called, we use a retinoscope, which is in school we learn as optometrists how to neutralize light based on different lenses. And so there's this technique called retinoscopy where we basically shine a light in a patient's eye in different directions, which is helpful for an infant or even a non-responsive adult, and then we use different lenses to neutralize that. And based off that response, that is how we determine a glasses prescription. It's helpful. Sometimes if a prescription just isn't adding up, optometrists always go back to kind of the bread and butter, the non-technology side. To do that, and it's very accurate. It works really well, and that's how we do it. A lot of times for kids in those settings, their eye muscles are almost so strong, and so sometimes we have to use a dilation drop to just allow those muscles to relax so that we can shine a light in and get the most accurate prescription. But yeah, so that's how we determine a prescription. So for parents that are out there that maybe haven't, you know, taken their kid in to get an exam because they're not sure if they'll be able to sit through it, your optometrist, you know, find somebody that you're comfortable with, ask around or call and make sure that they do children. But they will be very well equipped to figure out the most appropriate prescription if your child has one.
All right, we're going to go to John. We're having a little trouble. I'm having a little technical trouble at my home studio here. I know that we had a question coming in, Jesselyn, about insurance. What do you find in Maine? Do most people's health insurance pay for their optometrist? And if not, is there a place where people can get help for that?
Yeah, great question. So there's kind of two areas of insurance, right? There's medical insurance and then there's vision insurance. Vision insurance really is kind of just meant for the glass, like the material part. So glasses, maybe contact lenses. Most medical insurance plans do provide a comprehensive eye exam. Specifically, if a patient has a medical eye condition, cataracts, diabetes, dry eye disease, those sorts of things, glaucoma, macular degeneration, those are always done through, those are medical eye conditions, and so they're done through the medical insurance portion. As far as access, you know, we live in a state that has a lot of resources for that. I would say, you know, if somebody has a workplace provider, talking to their HR department is a good first step. Also reaching out to the Maine Optometric Association, and they can provide great resources. The Maine Optometric Association's website is maine.aoa.org.
Maine.aoa.org.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific. Okay, I seem to have gotten my computer back, so I'm going to be going to John, who's calling from Lincolnville. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. A quick question about floaters. I got three or four of them maybe 3 years ago. And it's amazing that the eye adapts and you begin to see through them and they don't bother me, you know, except when I'm against a blue sky or something and I see them. I just wonder, is there any way, anything that we can get rid of them now? When I did research 3 years ago, it basically said you live with them. But I was curious to see if there's been any new techniques to get rid of them.
Yeah. Dr. Quint, I have a feeling John is not the only person with that question.
That is a common question I get, John. Very well said. And yes and no. So as a whole, floaters are normal. They're annoying for sure, but most of the time they are harmless. And you're right that with time, the brain does learn to ignore them. And so while they never go away 100%, for most things, once your brain is adapted, they should be far less noticeable. In a few situations where the floater is really large or causing a level of issue that is just past being annoying, there is a few kind of laser procedures that have done, but it comes with a lot of risks. And so, you know, having that conversation with your optometrist and would be a good first start. In the United States, there's not a lot of laser options. Outside of the U.S., it's a little bit of a different world. But I think it makes for a promising opportunity for more treatment plans to develop down the road.
All right. Well, thanks for your call, John. We will move here to Nancy, who's calling from Rome. Hi, Nancy. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering if the doctor could speak to the use of sunglasses for infants and small children as well as adults.
Great question.
Sunglasses.
Yes, sunglasses are so important. So UV light, we have a lot of solid research that shows that can cause a lot of damage to a lot of the different tissues of the eye. Luckily, some of the tissues of the eye naturally filter out UV light, but it is helpful to block, you know, that remaining percentage that isn't filtered out. So when a patient is looking for sunglasses, it's important to look for things that block 100% UVA, 100% UVB, and then polarized sunglasses are also really helpful. And sunglasses should be worn for for all ages. So definitely infants, definitely children through adult life. And what's interesting is that for patients who have had cataract surgeries, so cataract surgery is a surgical procedure where the natural lens of the eye is removed and an artificial kind of plastic implant is put in. And because that natural lens naturally blocks out some of the UV light, once it's removed, there's a discussion in the eye care world, even though some of the plastic implants does kind of block some of the UV light, that there might be more of a need for sunglasses for a patient who potentially has had cataract surgery. But as a general rule, everybody should be wearing sunglasses, even on cloudy days, just like sunscreen.
Nancy, thank you so much for your call. We're going to try to squeeze in one more question. My adult daughter suffered a concussion a few years ago when hit on the head by a baseball at her young son's baseball game. Her eyes are not able to focus in the same place, thus she cannot read or work at a computer screen for any length of time. She was given eye exercises, but it's been a few years with no change. She's only 39. What is the prognosis for this type of injury?
Great question. So, of course, it's hard for me to give a specific prognosis without having, you know, all the details, all the facts. But concussions and any sort of trauma can be really have a large role in the focusing system of the eyes. There are certain tools, certain glasses, certain tint sunglasses that can help. Here in the great state of Maine, we have optometrists that specialize in kind of rehabilitation eye care and can talk about different visual exercises that can best improve a prognosis. So my advice would be to have that specific discussion if you're not seeing some improvement after a couple of years, to talk to your optometrist or to seek out one of those neuro rehab specific optometrists to talk about what some options are.
So look up neuro rehab, the specialty.
Yeah, so there's, you know, in Maine, obviously it's a specialty, so there's not a lot, but we have some really great neuro rehabilitation optometrists. And if you're having difficulty finding them, just talk to your optometrist and they can help get you set up.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Quint, for spending time with us today. Jesselyn Quint, an optometrist practicing in Augusta, co-owner of Smart Eye Care that has locations in Augusta, Bangor, and Farmingdale. Sandra Harris ran the board today. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.